Okay, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right, I guess I'll have to tell the truth then. As stated, my topic is going to be about cover crops and how they improve water productivity with deficit irrigation and control wind erosion under our semi-arid conditions. You may notice there's a pivot irrigation system out here. We do irrigation. Here in the foreground, you notice a little active dune building. It's soil erosion. Here on the road, there's actually some soil moving. I'm guessing surface creep could be saltation. I got this slide from my co-author here, and of course, he's very aware of soil erosion. But actually, it would be Scott that I would put in our, a cover crop evangelical. I mean, a very strong promoter of using cover crops. I am more concerned with this part of this picture, the irrigation. And I'm seeing saltation over here by this system. And if you could see the drops, you'd see they're at an angle of about 20 degrees off of vertical. So it's blowing. And this is the sort of problem we have quite a bit. We also have, even in semi-arid conditions, a problem with water erosion. Doesn't happen often, and when you see it, you always take a picture. But I know you were expecting a Dust Bowl picture. I wanted to make this photograph, or use this photograph, to make the point that this is a current, active, ongoing problem of soil erosion. This was taken last March. It was taken from an aircraft that was operating at 38,000 feet, so it's an airliner. Now, right in here, you'll see there's some circles. These are pivot irrigation. Diameter of those pivots, we're looking at 800 meters. That's the same dimension as these circles over here. So it's a huge area that is affected by this wind erosion problem. Now, say what you will about soil health, but whenever your soil is floating in the air, it's not very healthy. In fact, it's a little disorienting because you really can't see much out there. I've included an inset just so that you know that there is something beyond this cloud of dust. And so the question that we're trying to address is, how do you control soil erosion by wind? Well, and we do have water. It's just not a big issue. Here's my Dust Bowl picture. This is Arthur Cobble Farmstead. It was photographed in 1936. That is then, this is now. The area is pretty much managed in CRP. CRP is basically for cover. If you're trying to do production agriculture, you need other solutions for your wind erosion. The single best thing is to deal with this barrier between the wind and the soil. A cover crop, or in this case, this is wheat that's grown in rotation, provides cover. If you can reduce the wind velocity, vertical or standing residue works great for that. Again, this is part of a crop rotation, and we're looking at residues that slow down the wind as well as cover it or protect it. And then, of course, in extreme conditions, you can rely on tillage to break up your soil and give you large enough aggregates that they won't be entrained by the wind stream. The real relationship, though, that I want to touch on or focus on is the soil cover. You notice when it's greater than 30%, we reduce our soil erosion so that it's less than 0.3 of what the soil erosion would be if the soil was bare. This is also kind of why the NRCS is saying you need at least 30% soil cover in order to have conservation tillage or conservation practices in, you know, defined in place. Now, this works for both water and wind erosion. Some work happened way back in the 90s. What's happening? Well, with water erosion, the residues intercept the raindrop impact. Infiltration rates remain good. That in turn prevents any or reduces the soil water or the water going over the soil. That prevents entrainment. With wind erosion, it's similar to that. I mean, borrowed this from folks I know in Kansas. But wind erosion, you have active movement of the soil, either as it's rolling the larger grains along the soil surface, or with saltation, actually this particle will be spinning. You get a Bernoulli effect. It lifts the soil particle up about a meter, maybe a little bit more, and then falls back downwind to impact on the soil and dislodge still more particles, including particles that are suspended. Residues, on the other hand, will entrap the particles that are moving by surface creep, and they'll entrap and prevent some of the saltation. So cover is a wonderful thing. Now, a lot of what we do is crop rotations. And crop rotations, any kind of crop production, doesn't matter if you're in semi-arid regions or elsewhere, those work really good if it rains. This picture was photographed as we're rolling in on our fourth year of drought. It's tough to grow crops if it doesn't rain. The photograph was taken about 2 days after the one from the airliner that I showed you. Now, the soil material moves to the side downwind of, you know, of whatever aggregate or soil cover you might have. In this case, it filled ditches that about a meter's worth of material. So, you need cover. This is one, you know, if you have drought, sure, you're not going to have it. Another problem you might encounter depends on the crop. We, in the semi-arid regions, grow a lot of cotton. It's a good cash crop. It's pretty tolerant of poor rainfall conditions. It doesn't produce a whole lot of residue. So if a person is trying to grow this cash crop annually, there is a need for a residue management practice. That's where cover crops enter. This is wheat. Wheat's probably our best entry for cover crops. It's planted, basically, you plant your cereals, it could be wheat, could be other things, in October. And if it's got sufficient rain, you get vegetative growth, life is wonderful. We chemically terminate this plant in March and gives us plenty of time to establish our cash crop every year, which would be in May, usually mid-May. This rainfall pattern, which is in Lubbock, is pretty common as you go south. I mean, it's actually a little more pronounced bimodal as you go south to San Angelo and Laredo even. Precipitation amounts are almost the same. It's just hotter in San Angelo than it is in Lubbock. Now, I went between Amarillo and San Antonio, and I photographed one field that was in a cover crop system. I thought I'd encounter so many more, but I stopped and photographed it. And as I'm thinking now, you're probably wondering, well, aren't our producers trying to be stewards of their soil? And they are. So why is it they don't grow cover crops? It comes back to semi-arid. You get somewhere between 25 and 50% of the precipitation you need to meet the PET of the crop. It's dry there. Now, granted, south of San Antonio, you have to deal with destroying this perennial plant so that they can control the certain insects. But from here to Lubbock, the problem could be anything. It's likely having precipitation at the time you needed to establish the cover. And since this was taken just after the windstorm, we're looking at what was somewhere between its third and fourth year of drought. So there are alternatives. If you I'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to show you this Great Plains and Central U.S. map and some of the reported mean annual precipitation, that's this, and the potential ET for various sites, and then of course, the ratio. Now, I looked up Indianola, Iowa, just to make sure it was in Iowa, and I trust Google, and it's not too far from Des Moines. And the precipitation there is 880 millimeters, slightly more than the PET. So what you've got is a management situation where you have to manage excess precipitation. Gives you a lot more flexibility in what you're doing compared to, say, Akron, where you get, according to this Ron Follett's paper, you get about 400 millimeters of precipitation, and PET is 700 for a ratio of about 60%. As you go north from Akron towards Mandan, the PET decreases. Precipitation's about the same. It gives you more flexibility to use cover crops when you have PET nearly met by your precipitation. Now in Texas, yes, we get a little bit more precipitation, we have a whole lot more PET. Potential evapotranspiration is high, and that makes using cover crops difficult. So what do you do in the case that you didn't get the precipitation you need to establish your cover crop, or for that matter, your cash crop? You can use irrigation. I love irrigation. More of my stuff is in dry land, though. Getting back to the story here. If you're using irrigation on the Great Plains, you're very likely pumping it out of, they're calling it now the High Plains Aquifer. I call it the Ogallala Aquifer. It's a groundwater source. Now, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but I'm going to tell you that there is essentially no recharge of this groundwater south of Nebraska. Now, in Kansas, Oklahoma, into Texas, the saturated thickness kind of declines. And where the irrigation has been going on quite a while in Texas, the saturated thickness is very nearly depleted. Now, I've got an example here. This is a well on our research center at Bushland. It started out in 57 with about 80 meters saturated thickness. 20 years later, it was down to 60 meters. 20 years after that, it was down another 7 meters. What happened was the pumping capacity declined from 900 gallons per minute. That's 60 liters per second, excuse me. From 60 liters per second to 30 after 20 years to 15 liters per second in 98. My guess is it's probably around 10 now. Now, what that has done is it's affected so much of the high plains that they're starting actually to regulate your well production. Less irrigation water is available. And in some cases, it doesn't really matter how they've regulated it. You don't have the water to pump, even if you, even if the regulations were imposed, because the water has been depleted. So as a result, production systems are shifting away from full irrigation and towards deficit irrigation. This concern about irrigation and whether or not you can establish your cover crops brings into focus the problem or the concern with cover crops, and that is, do they increase consumption or conservation? That's an issue in semi-arid regions that's kind of weighs heavy on our mind. Did I skip one? I did. Sorry about that. Now, some of the data I'm going to show you will be from a crop rotation. This allows us to have our residue. It's the wheat, sorghum, fallow rotation is what I'm showing here. It could be any summer crop. Basically, we start off with our wheat in October, harvested in July. It's using spring rainfall to make the grain. There's an idle period before we start our second crop, our summer crop, in the second year. It's harvested in the end of the third year. It uses this precipitation during the summer to produce the grain. Then we have basically a fallow period where no crop is grown in that third year. A cover crop would be similar in as much as you'd have just the summer crop and then a residue-producing cover planted in the fall. So getting back to our benefits. Wheat straw increases infiltration. And you're looking here at 15 minutes, we put on 19 millimeters. Gee, but that's a lot of water. Alternatively, the average 15-minute precipitation for Texas Panhandle, I'll restrict it, is 19 millimeters of precipitation. We get storms that come down all at once. And that's pretty much the reason why we're looking at infiltration amounts that are very similar. Because while it all comes down, it pretty much stays in place. Now, if it rolls out for an hour, yeah, we have a significant benefit where we have residue versus bare soil. So infiltration's a lot better. If we have a more intensive production system like continuous wheat, then we have a little bit of a benefit in our infiltration. Now, I did have a study. This is like we published this in 99, but it shows the terminate wheat cotton cover crop system. Rainfall that's infiltrated is almost as much as the precipitation we got. If you summed all of these, the on average benefit for having a cover crop in place was about 40 millimeters. That's great unless you spent 50 millimeters to establish the cover crop. The other advantage of residue is to control evaporation. Now, this is the rain and irrigation that's supplied in a study that we reported in 96. Came out to 320 millimeters, essentially the same as what we had for the transpiration. Well, that's the way of the arithmetic. Now, for the bare soil system, no residues, the evaporation from the soil and the evaporation from the crop or transpiration comes in at 160 millimeters. They're the same. Over here where we had the residue in place, the soil evaporation is controlled and we're down 60 millimeters. And all of that goes into evaporation from the crop. Now, water going through the crop is like gasoline going through your car engine. It's going to push you along, and that's always a good thing. Now, that's old data from Lubbock. This is a little bit newer example showing, okay, this till in this case for, this is the wheat sorghum fallow rotation deficit irrigated treatments. This till gives us less yield by about, I think it was 40%. Well, it was 350 kilograms per hectare compared with the no-till. Now, the study in Lubbock, that benefit of 60 millimeters translated to 200 kilograms per hectare. Basically, residue increases your yield. Same here, except that going through the rotation and into the summer crop, we had soil water storage, and that carried the yield a bit better. Now, corn, we actually had a response to the irrigation. The yields go from kind of miserable to really poor. But I'm honest. I'm telling you exactly how bad they did. You'll notice also the distill, where we removed or incorporated all our residue, yields were about 60% less, 80%, well, 60% less than where we had the no-till and all the residue in place. Same sort of response I would expect for cover crops. Now, notice here, in this year, the cover crops, the deficit irrigation was just bad, and there's no help in that. In 2009, where we had the residue in place, a cover crop or the residue, actually with the deficit irrigation, achieved yields that were comparable to our distill crops that were irrigated with twice as much water. Now, that's worth real money, and somebody, a producer, would consider this if he could expect that kind of a response. So, let me summarize. The cover crops are directly improving soil health by, what's the word I'm thinking of, preventing wind erosion, soil erosion. Indirectly, the cover crops add to biomass. There was a point I neglected to make. Some old reports, Chepel and Woodruff, 1968, they were talking about if you had droughts that reduced or prevented any establishment of a crop, it would take a couple years of normal precipitation to get back to normal or get back to a system that was consistent with what you would expect. My guess is this ties back to the microbial populations. There was some work done by several folks that also include Veronica Acosta Martinez at Lubbock, and basically the populations, the microbial populations shift, and that's why, you know, drought's a bad thing. And certainly, if you have cover crops going, it's a way to support these microbes. The other thing I wanted to point out goes back to the conservation tillage or cover crops, provide a residue barrier which reduces evaporation. This helps our soil water, definitely, and for the irrigation and rainfall that you're applying to your cash crop, you're looking at better yields for essentially the same input. So, under semi-arid conditions where you have limited precipitation, to use cover crops and residue management, or if you're using cover crops instead of residue management, you're taking a significant risk because you may not have the water to push your cash crop. Alternatively, if you're in a situation where you have no residue, no organic matter, no biomass to support your microbes, you really do need to consider how you're going to support those populations. If you're locked as Holden, actually, cover crops improve performance of the crop, cash crop, and so overall you come out ahead. And hopefully I haven't confused you too much. Any questions?
Thank you. variance distance are near and near by height.
Yes, sir.
And I think you've provided some information to help explain Chris's concept on sometimes the numbers in the published literature show that it takes twice as much water to produce corn, depending on what. And she was asking about management practices. It looks like you're saying that is related more to climate and the evaporative demand. And you hinted that producing a cover crop could have an impact on that fucking yielding cash flow. Elaborate a little bit on that potential impact because you haven't stored so much water.
Well, the corn is really sensitive to water stress. If that falls at the wrong time, if the plant's silking, if it's in anthesis, okay, that's a bad time to have water stress. And the yields, they don't go down gently. They're in a free fall. The other thing I neglected to mention was that as our irrigation or our water tables have declined, irrigation is being regulated. And production of cover crops would require, in some years, redirecting irrigation water from your allotment that would normally go for a cash crop to this cover crop. This is where you might get bitten, because you will have spent your water allotment to grow the cover crop when you need it for supplying your cash crop. Cotton's a little less sensitive to the drought stress in terms of timing, so you could get away with that a little more successfully.
So your suggestion, one reason we're not going to do that is economics. We're reluctant to grow a cover crop because the economics
Well, when given a choice, they're going to produce their cash crop. And, you know, we can't get them to consider the benefits unless we can assure them, the producers, that they can make their cash crop. And again, that there's risk to be managed in that one. Let me handle that one early. If you're growing irrigated corn, you can expect removal of soil water down to about a meter. The plants are using the irrigation. They're a little bit on the lazy side, I suppose. If it's dry land, you wouldn't be growing corn. You'd be growing sorghum or maybe cotton. And those soil water use there goes deep. I run my neutron tubes, my soil measurements with neutron tubes down to 2.3 meters. I do a lot of my water balance to 1.8 meters. And then the other question was, Why the termination? Okay, you want enough residue in place to stabilize the soil against wind erosion. You don't want this plant to consume water. So it's not about having too much water in the profile that you're wanting to dry out. It's you're wanting to conserve water that you do get. So you terminate in March. That gives you residue for the April wind. In May, when you're ready to go back to planting your cash crop, hopefully you'll get a rain and life is grand.
So it doesn't give you residue to prevent evaporation during the
storm? Actually,
if you terminate that early, it doesn't look like you get enough residue to
Well, actually, you get some residue cover. You put on your pests, herbicides. It lasts about 6 weeks to canopy closure in Lubbock. And in Amarillo, actually, you got a little bit more room to play with. But you do have residue cover into the summer and really until canopy closure.
All right. With that, we're going to have to keep moving. Thank you, Lewis, and let's give another round to Lewis. Thank you.